Hey, Fedheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is episode 41, Japanese Whiskey 2.0. You guys like Japanese Whiskey 1.0 so much that we decided to bring it back with even more whiskey this time. Thanks for tuning in wherever you are in the world. We're rebroadcasting the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thanks very much for our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners. Hope you guys are out there staying safe. Appreciate our podcast listeners, whether you're listening through iTunes, Podbean, or an Android app. I am your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. I'm joined by my co-host, Robbie Rass, who I missed last week. Rob, it's good to have you back, brother.
Yeah, we stretched the cord a little bit last week without doing a show, but baseball season's over, so I have no more excuses. It's not over for everybody, but it's over for my Giants, and that's all right. You know, frankly, I'm happy to have my nights and weekends back. Yeah, other than that, things are good, man. Haven't been smoking too many cigars lately, so I'm excited to get back to it. We're working on this Reserva box press, Tortuga Reserva box press from Victor, who's our guest tonight. So it's going to be a fun show. We've got some whiskeys, one that I've tried before and two that I haven't, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll get to Victor. We're keeping him hanging for a second, but he's got a very interesting whiskey tonight, which we talked about at the show, and maybe we'll introduce him and let him talk about that because he kind of sampled before the show.
Oh, we just lost him.
He'll come back. You know, we were at the show, and neither of us, I think, really knew that Victor was
a... When you say you're talking about IPCPR.
The IPCPR, that's right. The IPCPR 2015 in New Orleans. Please check out our coverage on YouTube. Make sure to subscribe and like. And Victor, as it turns out, is a huge whiskey aficionado, loves whiskey. Of course, we got talking about Japanese whiskey, and of course, Victor called his guy, which was kind of cool for us to watch. He called his guy and got this Chichibu. So Victor's back. Victor, thanks very much for joining in and sharing our pairings. This is kind of a special show.
Thanks for having me on. I mean, this is it's a pleasure, obviously, to be here on the Whiskey Show. I mean, as you guys know, my love for rare finds and scotch, and I always love learning when I come on the show. I always learn when I'm on the show, so I'm really looking forward to it again.
So, of course, you'll be drinking a very special limited bottle of Chichibu.
I feel like we talk about this whiskey all the time.
All the time.
The only reason why I have it is because of you guys.
Yeah, John was telling the story. We're at IPCPR, and we start talking about the peated and the Chichibu Ichiro's the peated, which we talked about on the show several times. And we happen to mention, I've been looking for a bottle forever. Victor says, let me call my guy. Well, oh, yeah, he's got a couple bottles. Do you want one? It turns out it's a bit out of the sharing our parents' budget at the moment. But, no, I'm glad you were able to get your hands on it. I know you've tried it, but you're going to have some more on the show. So that's cool that you're going to be sampling it with us. I think, John, I still have half a pour left.
I hope so.
Sample that you sent me. So I'm saving that for a special day. Who knows?
Maybe before we jump right into it, I'll give the viewers a little bit of background on Chichibu, and then we can maybe talk a little bit about Chichibu or Japanese whiskey in general. Chichibu is kind of an interesting story. They were only founded in 2004 by Ichiro Akuto, who is the great-grandson of the founder of the Hanyu Distillery. And why that's relevant is the Hanyu Distillery had a significant amount of aged whiskey. They were a distillery that ran for many years. They started in 1980, closed down in, I believe, 2004, and then eventually the distillery actually burned down because I think it was just abandoned in 2008. But what Ichiro did is he went in there and took all their stock, claimed all the whiskey, which was really smart because, you know, they're sitting on all this really great whiskey. Now, what he starts to do is integrate these malts into some of the younger malts that, because Chichibu's only been around since 2004, they've only been producing since 2008. So it's a really young spirit. But now you take that spirit and you mix it with something that's maybe 10 years old, maybe 15 years old, don't know, because it's not an age statement whiskey, but it's brilliant. And just a shout out, he did that through a sake maker, Sesenakawa Shuzu, who was a sake maker, and he helped him get those barrels, sort of integrate the barrels and start that process. So what makes the Chichibu in general sort of special is that, you know, he's got this really interesting look at the whiskey craft, and he's integrating these really elegant older malts to make something that's quite unique.
I could listen to you talk about scotch. Seriously. It's not scotch, but whiskey in general, like, all day. Because I like Victor says, I mean, this is show, what, 36?
41. Close.
And they say I don't pay attention. For show 41, I definitely feel like I learn something every time. I don't know how many whiskey shows we've done, maybe 5 or 6, maybe 10. I don't know. I don't pay attention. I feel like I learn something every time. And I'm sipping on this first. It's this first one. And Joan, how do you, is it Yoichi?
Yoichi, yeah.
Oh, I got it right. The Yoichi 10. And for a 10-year, this is pretty damn good. And I don't mean to get ahead of ourselves, but I'm excited, man. We've got some good stuff going here. But Victor, you want to tell everybody a little bit about the cigar that we're smoking? I don't know if you're. I think you're inside, so you're probably not smoking tonight. But
I'm definitely going to light up. I have an anniversary cigar that I'm going to fire up.
Oh, an anniversary cigar.
But I'd love to tell you about that cigar.
Yeah, so we're both working on the box press, and we're smoking 6x60, which, I mean, if you guys know me, I think I've enjoyed maybe 2 60 ring gauge cigars, maybe 3. So I was a little bit hesitant on this one, but the flavor profile is really, really nice. And I mean, I don't know if you guys can see, but I just punched with a tiny little punch here because I couldn't find my cutter, so I just used a quick punch. And the draw is great. The flavor profile is nice. There's a little bit of spice there, not overpowering by any means. Kind of a creamy base in the flavor profile for me anyway. But Victor, tell us a little bit more about it.
I think you pretty much covered it all. I'm happy with the way you described that.
Perfect. Let's move on.
All right. Let me just add a little bit on top, I guess. So the box pressed series, I give a little history on the box pressed series. The box pressed series I released in 2012, and it was the first box pressed series of cigars under the Tortuga name. And it was dubbed Tortuga Reserva because prior to that I had Tortuga Edición Limitada, and another regular line extension of Tortuga. So this was the first of the Reserva series. It comes in 4 sizes. You're smoking the 6x60, which is the Triunfo. And the goal for the box pressed originally was to get larger ring gauge sizes in people's hands, like guys like you that aren't really comfortable with a 60 ring, and make it so that it was a little bit more comfortable to smoke. And back in 2012, there really weren't many 60 ring box pressed cigars. In fact, you could probably count them on one hand. So whether or not I was one of the first or first of many, who even knows, but I always felt like a box press cigar was has a nice flavor to it, very different than the round. So if that blend was actually round and box pressed, you'd taste a lot of difference in the two side by side. So the box pressed, I think, kind of cools it down a little bit, makes it a little bit. John uses this word. I love it when he says it. He says that Tortuga's elegant. I love hearing that because, as you guys know, that I'm all about balance when I blend a product. So having that be a very cool smoke, non-intimidating 60 ring gauge is goal achieved for me. So happy to hear that you guys are really liking it.
Yeah, and I think, and maybe we can hit up one of the audience questions here, because Bob Dog wants to know, is choosing a cigar to pair with Japanese whiskey drastically different than a cigar that you would pair well with bourbon? And the answer to that is absolutely. Now, it does depend on the type of Japanese whiskey that you're pairing with, but tonight we're pairing with very nuanced, very delicate Japanese whiskeys. These aren't in your face. They're not hugely sherry bombs. Even with the Chichibu the Peated, it's very nuanced. It's very balanced. So you don't want something like the Coyote Negra, which is going to be really full-bodied, and because it's full-bodied, it's going to run over the nuances of the cigar. So the nice thing about the Triumfo, the Tortuga Reserva, is that, you're dealing with something that's elegant, it's nuanced, and when you do something like that, that's going to pair really well with a delicate whiskey because it's going to play off some of the subtler characteristics of that whiskey, whereas you know, with a bourbon, and I love bourbon, don't get me wrong, we've had lots of bourbon on the show. Bourbon, you know, tends to be a little bit more powerful, it's got a little bit more punch to it, more of that caramel note, a little bit of spice to it. So again, you know, that can run over something in the medium-bodied line pretty easily. So the short answer is yes, and you just heard the long answer.
So I've kind of cheated a little bit. And like I said, I've already been sipping on my Yoichi 10. And the pairing is really nice. And you were talking about how, this is directed, I guess, towards Bob's question, is, you know, picking something that's going to pair well with Japanese whiskey. And again, like you said, it depends on the type of whiskeys that we're dealing with. For me, I've got one 10-year and two 12-year, none of which are peated as far as I know. So I was anticipating something a bit lighter, a bit fruitier. And if you go with a cigar that's got that, you know, more spice to it, like the Coyote Negra or something like that, you're really going to run into some issues. In my head, I'm thinking about, like, you have a basketball game, right? You have two teams. Everybody's the same size, except for one guy's like 3 feet taller than everybody else. So that guy's just going to run the game, right? And that would be your Coyote Negra. It's just going to blow out everything in the flavor. That's how that image populated in my head. Is that strange?
I like sports.
You're right on, I think. Yeah.
That's how my brain works in kind of a weird way. But I felt like this kind of leveled the playing field as far as the profile of the cigar, the profile of the scotches, whiskeys. Sorry, I'm going to say scotch a lot, and it's just wrong because they're not scotches. They're Japanese whiskey. But this Yoichi 10, and no one else is drinking this tonight as far as I know, so I'll talk a little bit about the profile. There is a ton of green apple that mm-hmm. I'm getting out of this. And it pairs so nicely with the creamy aspects of this cigar. And it's bringing out a little bit more spice from the cigar than I was getting beforehand. And the pairing of that kind of sweet, tangy notes that I'm getting from the Yoichi 10 and combining that with a little bit of spice, a little bit of earthiness I get from the cigar, really, really nice so far. Off to a good start. John, you're going to jump in when I'm talking about these whiskeys and giving some background because you know a lot more about this than I do. But Yoichi it's one of the distilleries that's owned by Nikka, and we talked about some of the different Nikka. We had Nikka Coffee on, and we did a couple of different ones. Yoichi, they don't give me a whole lot of information. It's single malt. It's aged. Matured for 10 years or more, and is characterized by a festive nose reminiscent of fruit and a smooth, velvety palate. I love that it's velvety. But beyond that, I don't know a whole lot about it. I don't know if you want to go into a little bit more detail, John, or not.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've obviously had a Japanese whiskey 1.0 show, and if you haven't watched it, definitely watch it. You know, a lot of people really really liked that show, really resonated with them. And I think one of the things that really stands out is, and I don't know if this is, you know, maybe some inherent bias that people have against Japan or maybe against drink makers from Japan in general, but that, you know, while Japanese, you know, is Japan any good at making whiskey? Well, I mean, they've been making whiskey for near 100 years. And, you know, you think about Japanese whiskey making, you think, well, is it something new? And, I mean, to be honest, some of the Japanese distilleries predate some of the Scottish distilleries. Now, not all of them, but Yoichi goes back to 1934. And I think what's interesting for me, and it's sort of this interesting point-counterpoint where you've got a lot of the distilleries that are very modern, a lot of modernized equipment, but then they have this really classic traditional way of approaching things. Like Yoichi, for example, they heat their stills with coal. And you think, well, that, I mean, coal, who does that? And the whole reason they do that is because they feel that it provides a certain heat profile to the distillate that gives the spirit a certain characteristic. The coal adds, you know, a little bit of smokiness to the spirit, versus, you know, most distillers in Scotland are going to use direct fire natural gas or steam heat. And, you know, again, that's just kind of one of the curiosities about, you know, you think of Japan as being this sort of technological modern marvel, but then when they approach whiskey, they do it in a very classic, very traditional way, because, you know, it's one of those things, and I think maybe you can speak to this, Victor, that it's almost like cigar making where, I mean, you can do it with a machine, but in some ways you just can't beat some of the handmade, artisanal, classic ways of producing something.
Well, it definitely makes it romantic, that's for sure. And, you know, when you talk about it, it's interesting hearing about the country of origin, right? So, like, you know, Scotland is the mecca of scotch, but whiskey is pretty much made all over the world. And when you relate it to, like, cigar terms, of course, the birthplace of premium cigars is Cuba. However, in today's time, we all know from smoking many variety of cigars that the best seem to come from Central America these days. You know, I don't want to sound extremely biased. I mean, if you want my honest opinion, I mean, the best tobacco comes from Nicaragua, and some of the best cigars on planet Earth come from Nicaragua. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean where the most stuff comes from or where the birthplace is. It's just a matter of, you know, the right people getting together and doing it from a specific area and duplicating all the foundation principles of producing an excellent product. And I mean, I gotta say, I mean, this is my first bottle of Japanese whiskey, and it's pretty incredible.
That's your first bottle?
Yeah, I've never had Japanese whiskey before, ever.
Oh, man. It's like getting your first car and having it be a Porsche or stuff like that. It's just, you're setting yourself up for disappointment now because it's so good. No, I'm being silly, but
yeah, look at it. I mean, the color, everything about this, the smell, like the aroma, the everything. It's just incredible. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to disappointment on anything Japanese from here on out, right?
No, not at all. I mean, like I said, this is, I don't know, on this is the second show we've had, so I've probably had maybe 7 or 8 different Japanese whiskeys at this point. I do think that's the best one that I've had, but I haven't really. That's more of an upper echelon type whiskey, and I haven't really delved too far into that. And really, only because of John that I have. So,
have you had this before?
Yeah. We featured it on the first one, right, John?
We did, yeah.
Yeah, that was the first time that I had tried it, and John was nice enough to send me another little sample after that. So,
how are you sending the samples? What do you have, like?
He didn't send them to me. He brought them to me at IPCPR. He showed up with a bunch of these little guys, little
small like shampoo bottles.
Yeah, like little little 2.5 ounce bottles. Nice. And they're all labeled, you know.
Nice.
Because John's very meticulous with this kind of thing. But I've got, I don't know. You know, you've probably given me about 60 of these.
Yeah, I'm sure. But sharing anyway, is caring.
Yeah, absolutely.
Drink to that. Cheers.
Yeah.
Senpai.
Is that cheers in Japanese?
That is cheers in Japanese.
Prost.
I always go with slancha.
Yeah. Before we get to our first break, I'll just talk a little bit about the whiskey that I'm sipping quietly in the background here, which is the Miyagikyo. Now, I've got a few expressions of the Miyagikyo. This is the 15-year. It's 45%. And I think one of the things that stands out, and this is kind of an interesting cultural thing for Japan, is that you'll notice there's, of course, kanji characters in the bottle, but But one of the things that is sort of a thing for Japanese whiskeys, if they're making whiskey for export, they're going to put English writing on the bottle because it's considered like Scotch whiskey. It's considered a badge of honor. You put English on the bottle, it means it's a very popular export product. This is 15 years old. It's also from the Nikka Distillery Company. Nikka is just an enormous beverage company. They're actually owned by Asahi Brewing, which is the biggest beverage company in Japan, and I mean worldwide. They're just enormous. Asahi also owns the Ben Nevis Distillery in Scotland. They bought it out in 1989. We already talked about that they own Yoichi. They also own Miyagikyo, which I'm drinking. They own Tochigi, which is a whiskey distillery, coffee grain whiskey. They own Moji. Moji does distilling and bottling. And they also own Hirasaki, which does cider, brandy, and apple wine. So, I mean, just an enormous, enormous beverage company. The way that they describe this is soft and luxuriant, fragrant. They say that with the Miyagikyo, they use a steam heat process for distillation, which gives it different characteristics than the Yoichi. And they say it's got a full and mature nose palate that's reminiscent of cacao nuts, a deep, mature sweetness and richness. Now, that doesn't really talk a little about the flavors for me. What I get is, this sort of rich candied fruit with just a hint of spice, not a ton of spice, sort of reminiscent of what I experienced with a sherry cask, but just really, really subtle. Tons of fruit, like there's just tons of orange rind on the nose. There's some strawberry in it. For a first pairing with this cigar, I mean, these go brilliantly together. I've been quietly enjoying this while we've been chatting.
I'm already moving on to my second, which is another offering from Miyagikyo. This is the Miyagikyo 12, which, let me see if I've got this pulled up. It doesn't really give me, again, a ton of information. I don't know where you're getting your information, John, but I'm not getting that here. This one, the Miyagikyo 12, a harmony of aroma of aged casks with sweet hints of vanilla. And it's gently peated. Or it's gently peat. The soft taste is elegantly deepened by a sweet and tangy fruits. It smells fantastic. And, I don't really smell any peat on there. Usually when something's peated, you can pick up on that. I don't really smell it. But I'll dive into this as we get into our second pairings.
Just a reminder to our audience that you are watching or listening to Sharing Our Pairings, Episode 41, Japanese Whiskey 2.0 with special guest Victor Vitale. Wherever you are in the world, appreciate our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners and our podcast listeners and all of our live listeners. You guys are pounding us with questions, hoping to get your weasel on because there are going to be some giveaways this show. Rob originally started with a really nice cigar pack. And Victor's feeling good today. He's going to throw a couple more packs to chase that up. So make sure you get your questions in.
Fire away.
Yeah. So Victor, tell us about the Chichibu. What are your first impressions?
Just wow. I mean, so I'm an amateur Scotch enthusiast. And like I said on the last show, I'm really good at drinking Scotch. I'm not very good at describing Scotch, so I'll do my best. Now, this says Chichibu the peated, aged 3 years. And I got to tell you, I mean, just from a novice perspective, it's not overly peated like a Lagavulin or a Lafroig or some of the others that have like a larger amount of peat. I know there's a peat scale and there's a different percentage of peat that's added. I have no idea how much peat is or what percentage of peat is in the Chichibu. But for folks that are afraid, and you guys probably have heard this 1,000 times, people say, I don't like peat. Get it away. Just give me my Glenlivet or Glenfiddich cherry cask. This is just... and I'm going to use that word again that John uses. This is elegant. This is probably the most elegant peated whiskey I've ever had. The taste it doesn't overwhelm your palate. You know how some peated whiskeys or scotches, they just kind of leave a lot of the Oh, that's my, yeah, Charlotte.
A little flyby there.
They kind of leave like that big, juicy, beefy feel of peat in your mouth. This kind of just, the finish is just long enough. You know, I wouldn't describe it as a super long finish where the peat is there. It's kind of like, you know there's peat, and then it goes away, and then you start getting all of the other flavors of what's going on. And I just don't know what's in there. I mean, it's just packed with all this deliciousness that I don't even know how to describe it. So I don't know. Maybe John can help me out with this one.
Well, I think one of the things to keep in mind is it is, again, Chichibu is a very new distillery. Their spirit is very young, and they do follow most of the rules of Scotch distilleries in terms of age statements and how they describe their whiskeys. And, you know, one of the things to keep in mind is, you know, they by law, or at least by Scotch law, they don't, again, they follow that rule. They have to put the minimum age of the whiskey. That's the maximum age. That's the minimum age. So the youngest whiskey that goes in there is actually from the Chichibu Distillery, and it's 3 years old. But obviously Ichiro is taking some of the malt from the Hanyu Distillery, and I mean, who knows? He could be putting in 15-year, 17-year, 21. I wouldn't expect that if he put a 21 or 17 in there that it's a lot. But he's malting this all together. He's mixing this all together to create this sort of concerto of flavors. And I agree that you know, what struck me is that it is actually quite peated, but it's so balanced. You know, he's not looking to blow your face off with peat. He's looking to create this flavor profile that includes many different things. Also has peat, but peat isn't the and it's so surprising for me to drink an Islay style whiskey where peat isn't the dominant flavor.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
It's, to put it into cigar terms, it's a cigar that's got a lot of Ligero in it, but when you're smoking it, you almost don't even recognize that there's that much Ligero in there because the flavor is going to be so balanced out. I can remember almost exactly the first time that I tried it, and that peat does get you right up front, you know, the first few sips, but it just kind of melts away. And to put it on the scale for me of peated whiskeys, you know, it's like you said, it's nowhere near like a Lafroig or anything like that, less than a Lagavulin. And to me, it kind of comes in right underneath like something like an Oban that's peated, but it's not overly peated. If that were the scale, I would put it just below something like that. But the flavor is just so much smoother, so much easier to drink. But I have a question, and I've wanted to ask John. I've wanted to ask you this question before because you've talked about this in age statements, and I don't think that I've asked this question. If I have, whatever, it's been 65 shows, so who knows? That was a joke. It's only been 41. No, I forgot my question. No, okay, so with the age statements, you're saying that it's the minimum age, say 3 years or whatever.
Correct.
So does that age statement rule, does that prohibit them from saying, well, it's the youngest is 3 years or whatever the term is, but there's also something in here that's 14 years and 21 years. But wouldn't it benefit the sales to say that it's got older spirit in there?
Well, I think the intent behind the law in Scotland, and it's a good law because it protects the consumer, is to prevent someone from saying, well, that, you know, yeah, it's a 3 year, but this has got 21 year in it. And you go, okay, well, cool, but how much? And, you know, really they're trying to protect the consumer by saying, well, you can't advertise it's got 21 year because you're not going to say in a you know, whatever ounce, I can't do the math in my head, I think in milliliters for bottles, but in you know, in a 700 milliliter bottle, well, maybe there's only 2 milliliters of 21 year whiskey. Okay. Well, you know, and they're not going to disclose that. So just to make it simple, you know, Scottish law, they said, look, this is how it's going to be. You can put whatever you want in there in terms of age statement. And we didn't really talk about this, but, you know, they still follow the rules of they're not adding anything to the whiskey. It's malted barley, it's water, and maybe Pete if they decide to add Pete, but that's it. You know, there's no additives. They don't generally use the caramel coloring like the Scottish industry can use. So, again, very traditional. But, you know, they just said, look, to protect the consumer, we want to know what the youngest whiskey is that you're using that bottle, and it protects the consumer. Now, I think this drives the larger conversation, and maybe we'll have another show about this, which is no age statement versus age statement. And there's a, you know, lots of whiskey enthusiasts and Scotch enthusiasts who are up in arms over age statement whiskeys versus not no age statement. We talked a little bit about this offline because there's a lot of people that are really hung up on age statement whiskeys. And you know what? We always say in the show, drink what you like. But there are a lot of really, really good no age statement whiskeys out there because they're not caught up on this idea of it has to be a certain age. They're looking to blend for a flavor profile. And if you remove the sort of handcuffs of an age statement, it turns out you can create a pretty darn good beverage.
Okay.
So I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. It does. So it's, I mean, in essence, they can't say that, well, there's 15 year and there's 20 year or whatever. So I guess a follow-up question, and this probably isn't best directed towards you, it's just more rhetorical, I guess. If I'm creating some whiskeys, and I'm going to have one with a 3-year age statement, and I've got one with a 15-year age statement, and one with a 12-year age statement, and I've got X amount of 21-year whiskey, wouldn't I put it more in the 15-year bottle and the 12-year bottle than the 3-year bottle? I don't know. I mean, that's a very ignorant. It's a very ignorant question on my part because I have no idea how these things are blended.
No, you're absolutely right, and you would because you got to think, again, the economics of it. If you've got a 15-year whiskey, that spirit's been sitting in a barrel, you know, bringing it back to tobacco. If you're using a binder or a filler that's been aged for 3 years, that's 3 years that you've been sitting on millions of dollars worth of tobacco and not making any money. So, yeah, if you're selling a 15-year bottle, yeah, you're probably going to use your 21 and that 15 because you want to get those ducats back, son. Like, you know, that's a lot of years to be sitting on a lot of stock and not making any money. You know, and that's not something the average distillery can do.
Okay, yeah, that's I guess that was the crux of my original question. But anyway, we can move forward. I'm done asking questions. We have a bunch of audience questions. We can still jump into our second pairing. I don't even know what your second pairing is, John, because I keep talking.
I am going with the Ichiro malt, specifically because, you know, we're talking about the Chichibu. So this is from the Chichibu Distillery as well. This is a pure malt whiskey. So, again, you know, in some of the terminology we're throwing around kind of loosely, pure malt means it's pure barley. So there's no grain whiskey mixed into this. It's pure malted barley. Again, it can't be called Scotch unless it comes from Scotland. Sort of same as if you're having a bourbon, it has to be produced in the States. If you're having a Scotch, it has to be produced in Scotland. However, that being said, Japan does make an extremely authentic whiskey in Scottish style. So this is non-chill filtered, non-colored, and this is the Mizunara Wood Reserve. And I'll quickly just sort of throw it out there because it's one of the interesting things about Japanese whiskey production is that they've got, and it's Mizunara wood, and what that really is Japanese oak. And, of course, most Scotch and whiskey is aged in American oak. Part of the reason for that is American oak is very dense. It's very tight. So when you put alcohol in that barrel, you're not losing a lot of alcohol soaking into the barrel. And it takes a very long time. You can put whiskey in a barrel for 15 years and slowly impart some of the characteristics of that barrel into the whiskey without overrunning it. With Japanese oak, it's very, very porous, but it's got a lot of really interesting character to it that imparts a unique flavor that you're not going to get out of Scotch whiskey. And I think this is where Japanese whiskey maybe edges out Scotch whiskey because they can produce some flavors that you can't get out of Scotch whiskey. And one of the big things you get out of the Mizunara wood is you get some coconut. Normally out of American oak, you'll get vanilla, you'll get some stone fruit, maybe some strawberries. But out of Japanese oak, you're going to get coconut. You're going to get this sort of different tropical fruit, and because it's very porous, you can't leave the spirit in there for a long time because it's going to overwhelm the spirit. So this is finished in a Mizanara wood, but again, it's a no-age statement. We're sure that this has got some Hanyu spirit in it because all the Chichibu offerings are probably going to have some level of Hanyu spirit. And this is a very, even more delicate than the Miyagikyo. There's no spice on it. It does have some coconut quality. It's got some almost some banana on the nose. I'm getting some almost blueberries. And it's very light, very fruity, and very delicious.
Sounds good.
I like sounds and very delicious.
Very delicious.
I gotta say this has been very delicious. I've been I have the never ending glass going here.
Those are the best. Those are the best. It's good that we started a little bit earlier today. I have to cook dinner after this though, so I can't.
Can't get wasted like the last show we did.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I have to keep it. I got to keep it a little bit tighter, even though I did pour a little bit more of this Miyagikyo. This is really good. It's different than other Japanese whiskeys that I've tried. It's much more. I don't want to say fruit forward because that's more of a wine term, but it's just got a fruitier bouquet, if you will. And there's a sweetness that's underneath. It almost has some sherry cask type elements to it,
yeah.
That type of stuff that I like, a little bit of vanilla in there, but it's got a fruit component that I'm just not used to. It's quite good.
I think what's interesting is that the Miyagikyo 12 and the Miyagikyo 15, I bought both because, you know, you think, okay, well, they're probably going to have similar profile. 15 is just going to be more nuanced or what have you. But they actually have a very different profile, at least for me, where I did find that and I think fruit forward is a great way to describe it, where the Miyagikyo 12 might be described as almost a fruit bowl. You got strawberries, you got melon. You do have a little bit of that sherry spiciness in there, whereas the Miyagikyo 15, some of those heavy fruit elements have sort of given way, and it's a little bit more subtle based on the fact that it's been sitting in a cask or, you know, blended with older spirits. So it's a little bit more nuanced, and they are very different whiskeys.
Yeah, I almost had the 15 because you sent me a sample of that as well. Now I'm actually really looking forward to trying that one. This is quite good. I mean, it's different. I'm going to say it's different, and then I'm going to say it reminds me of one that we had before. So there you go. Here's my first contradictory comment of the day. The one that we had before, it came out of Suntory, and it was, the Hakushu, the Hakushu 12. That also had a lot of green apple in it.
Yeah.
And so that... I'm getting that. I'm looking here. Actually, I'm looking at that's my next whiskey. But yeah, that was a big flavor component for me in that. And that was, I mean, you get some apple and some other types of whiskeys, you know, from some scotches as well. But it's more of, that's more of a spiced apple to me. More of a, I don't know, like a fall apple, if you will, or like an apple cider type thing. But this is definitely green apple, not like a Jolly Rancher, but the flavor is really, really big. It's pairing well with the cigar, but I think I'm focusing more on the drink than the cigar with this pairing. So maybe it doesn't pair all that well. The Yoichi, I felt, was a pairing that really did complement both flavor profiles and brought it together. This is a little bit more one-sided. This is the tall guy on the basketball court.
So maybe we can take this opportunity to pound out some of these audience questions. Bob Dog says, for someone who's not too familiar with Japanese whiskey, what would you suggest as a starter? I think Rob just hit it with the Hakushu. Yamazaki 12, Miyagikyo 12. I mean, it really depends on what your local BevMo or liquor store has to offer. But those are all reasonably priced offerings. They're all very delicate and nuanced. They're not heavily peated. So they're a great way to start on Japanese whiskey, and you're going to find that, again, it's a unique offering. Even if you're already a Scotch drinker, it's going to provide you a unique medley of flavors that you're not getting out of your current Scotch lineup, I guarantee it.
Absolutely. And to jump on that, Hibiki 12 is the next
absolutely.
One. That's the next one on my list. And this falls right into Bob's question. The first two Japanese whiskeys that I had were both from Suntory. They were this Hibiki 12 and the Yamazaki, right?
Yeah.
The Yamazaki 12. And I went through a bottle of each, and I'm on my second bottle of the Hibiki. Lucky enough that they have it at my local BevMo at a very reasonable price. So it's budget friendly as far as a bottle of whiskey can be for that quality. So that's a good one to jump into as well. Or you could just be like Victor and get the Ichiro Peated.
I think I got a really good price. I mean, according to John, I mean, it was, John, help me out here. I mean, it was, I got a good price, right?
Yeah, in fact, we have a question. Maybe you can give a shout-out to your guy. I don't know if you want to or not, but Trip says, Victor, can you hook me up with your guy so you can get a bottle of the Chichibu? So maybe this is a good time to give a shout-out to your guy.
Yeah, sure. It's his name is Ryan. He's a third-generation spirit purveyor, a wine and spirit purveyor, and he's in Westboro, Massachusetts. And if you'd like, you can just give John your information. He'll send it to me, and I'll pass it along and make the introduction. Or I'm sure you could just go to it's called Julio's Liquors. You could go to juliosliquors.com. I'm sure it's either that or some sort of variation. But just look for Westboro, Massachusetts. Excuse me. And I know that he purposely kept a stash of about 6 or 7 bottles
for his purpose.
You know, I just happen to be one of those guys, so I don't know if he has any more, but he has all sorts of stuff. You guys got the video I sent last time I was in there, right?
I received it. I didn't share it with anybody, but it made me want to come visit, that's for sure.
I mean, that's just one aisle. I mean, up that aisle, which was probably, I don't know, what's an aisle, 30, 40 feet in a liquor store, maybe 50 feet, I don't know. There was probably 500 variations of scotches up that aisle.
It's like a candy store.
Yeah, it's a candy store. I mean, he has everything from rum, gin, vodka, all these different things that you've never even heard of. And it's like, I want to buy them all.
just go in with the straw and just start popping open bottles. That'll get expensive.
So he has that in the back. He has this really cool wine tasting area where you go to the register, they give you this card, and you can taste all of these super expensive wines. You just type in this code, and you put your glass under this thing, and it just puts out like a sip of wine so you can taste it before you buy it. I guess, I'm not really an expensive wine buyer, but I guess the folks that spend $400 or $500 on a bottle of wine, they want to taste it before they buy it, and that's the place to go and do it.
There you go, Trip. Check it out. You got the hookup. Just a reminder to our audience, you are watching or listening to Sharing Our Pairings, episode 41, Japanese Whiskey 2.0. Thanks again to our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners, wherever you are in the world. Hope you're staying safe. I want to give a shout-out to the Canadian cigar enthusiasts who have been tuning into our their Facebook group, and they've been tuning into our show lately. We've got a question, actually, from Jeff Boldrick before we move on to our last tasting here. He says he's never tried a Japanese whiskey. Is there a bourbon, scotch, or Canadian rye counterpart that would compare in any way? No for Canadian rye because it's a very different flavor profile. But I think the thing that, definitely go back and check out the Japanese Whiskey 1.0 because the intent behind Japanese whiskey production was to absolutely mimic the style of Scottish whiskey making. So the answer to that is yes and no. They have a lot of profile that they're trying to mimic the Scotch industry, but within that, I think, at least for me, their offerings are unique. They do offer flavors that I don't get out of Scotch whiskey, and that's why, you know, I've kind of gone a little crazy with the Japanese whiskeys, because it does offer some flavor profiles that I can't get out of the myriad of other Scotch whiskeys that I have on my ever-growing shelf.
You know, it's funny. We talk about the Japanese whiskey like it's this mythical thing, and it's so different than everything else. And, oh, my God, it's Japanese whiskey. But, I mean, but there's American whiskey. There's Tennessee whiskey, and then there's Colorado whiskey, and there's Scotch, and there's different different areas in Scotland that have that produce different styles of Scotch. And there's Irish whiskey, and they're all a little bit different. Yeah, they're all a little bit similar,
absolutely.
But they all have their cultural nuance, I guess you could say. And to say that, is there something that's similar to Japanese whiskey that's out there? Yes and no. I mean, I'm kind of echoing what John said. The closest comparison, I mean, obviously, given all the things that John has said, is some of the things from Scotland. But also, you're going to get those differences, that difference from the water that's used, the difference from the climate that they're in, and different styles of different processes. You know, like you were saying that Yoichi uses coal. And, you know, nobody else really does that. So you're going to get some differences there. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to say that there's something that's, oh, well, you should try this if you want to try Japanese whiskey. If you want to try Japanese whiskey, just try Japanese whiskey. But Sorry, what's that, Victor?
I was going to say it's really cool to add to your collection, at least to start, you know, to try. I mean, like me, for example, I had no idea. I mean, you know, again, I'm a super novice when it comes to Scotch. I'm more of an enjoyer of Scotch. I don't even think I'm an enthusiast like you guys. I'm kind of like a novice enthusiast. And when you guys said, "Hey, you got to try this Japanese whiskey," I picked up the phone. I was like, "Hey, what do I got to do here?" And he's like, "Hey, yeah, I got one for you. Put aside, you know, no, just come in and get it." So, I mean, for me, when I go over to my cabinet, and I have all this different stuff there, and it's just really cool to say, hey, this one's from Japan, and here's the, you know, a brief background on it. So, I don't know. That's all it takes for me, anyway.
For me, I was lucky in the sense that there was a bar, which, and actually my wife and I went down the other day to go go in and say hi to the folks there. The place is closed, so it's gone now. But there's a restaurant and a bar, and they had a really nice whiskey selection. And I got to know the bartender there a little bit, who happened to be from Nicaragua, so we had a lot to talk about. And he was pouring all this different stuff, these little tastes for me. And he says, "Have you ever tried Japanese whiskey?" And this was the first time I'd ever tried it. And that was when I tried the Hibiki and the Yamazaki, both 12-year. And on the way home, we stopped and bought a bottle of each. It was, I mean, we liked it that much. There's that newness factor or the cool factor of, hey, this is a little bit different, like you were talking about, Victor, and that definitely plays a part. But once you actually, even once you get past that and you just taste the product for what it is, it's phenomenal. Yeah. I haven't had a bad Japanese whiskey. Granted, I've only had, you know, these ones that I've found on my own and a bunch of stuff that John sent me, and John doesn't mess around with bad stuff, so I've been lucky in that sense. But yeah, it's hard because, I mean, not everybody's going to want to go out and drop, you know, depending on where you are, 50, 60, 70, 80 bucks on a bottle of something that you have no idea what it tastes like. So if you've got a whiskey bar in your area, or maybe a bar that's a bit more hip, if you will, they're going to have some of this stuff. And you can go down there and sample it for, you know, it's not good. It's they're not cheap pours, but it's cheaper than buying a bottle. So that would really be my suggestion as far as, you know, try to find a place that has it, maybe a cool liquor store that does tastings or something like that in your area. If you're looking for a place to start, like we said, pretty much anything out of Suntory, the 12 years, the Hibiki, the Yamazaki, and the other one, John, is
Hakushu. Hakushu.
I know if you've got a Costco near you, I think Costco carries stuff from Suntory. So, actually, was just there the other day, and they have the the new one from Hibiki, the Harmony. I think that's what it's called, right?
Yep.
And I was this close to picking up a bottle of it, but I didn't. And they had Lagavulin on crazy price on Lagavulin too, and I can't believe I left without buying it.
Where, Costco?
Yeah.
Well, I got to check it out.
16? My local Costco had the Lagavulin 16 for $55.
Whoa!
I would have been all over that.
Yeah, I don't know how I didn't. I don't know how I left with none, let alone two. I mean, I should have, or how I didn't leave with two, let alone none.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Get a bottle. Whatever. Yeah, it's.
That's a score right there. That's like, it's usually like $100.
Yeah, it's not cheap. So anyway, we can move forward.
Yeah, we better hop into these third pairings because we're coming up to the end of our Armed Forces Radio Network segment in about 7-8 minutes here.
Yes, give some stuff away too. Can we do that?
We can. So let me just quickly go through, and I feel bad rushing it because it's a brilliant spirit. And this is the Takatsuru 21. Again, this is from Nika. I was telling Rob before the show, this is an absolutely brilliant whiskey. What's unfortunate is at a tasting, and they've also released a non-age statement whiskey, which is also brilliant, and at one-third the price. So for the people out there that are age statement snobs, there's a lot of non-age statement whiskey out there that is phenomenal. I'll definitely be picking up their non-age statement. But what's interesting, because we've been talking about single malts up until this point, where either it's a single malt from a distillery. In the case of the Ichijibu, it's almost certainly a blended malt from two different distilleries. The Takatsuru is, in fact, they call it a pure malt. That's synonymous with blended malt. So what that means is it's spirit that comes from more than one distillery, which is quite common in Scotland. Scottish distilleries very frequently exchange spirit. It's a very open community. They trade spirit back and forth to get a flavor profile. In Japan, not so. Japanese distilleries are very, very competitive, fiercely competitive, and as such, they do not trade to spirit at all. So, and we'll talk more about this when we get to our After Dark segment because it's a pretty big piece, but it's curious to get a pure malt that's blended from multiple distilleries because that is very unusual for the Japanese whiskey industry.
I'll jump in with mine because I kind of showed it off a little bit already. the Hibiki 12, I keep holding the bottle incorrectly. There you go, so you guys can get a pretty good look at it. This one is from Centauri, like we talked about. They also produce Yamazaki and Hakushu, which we've also featured on the show. This is one of my favorites, even after everything that John has experienced, it's still one of my favorites. And it's very different from the two that I had tonight. When I took the first sip, I said, wow, it's just the change is so drastic. I can't go into too much about the, you know, their processes and everything. I'm just going to give you the notes here. Notes on the palate: banana, pomegranate, custard, and pink pepper. I don't know that I've ever had a pink pepper before. But the flavor on this is much richer than with these other two. It's a warmer flavor. That custardy note that they talk about, to me, it's a bit more of a caramel type flavor. It is much, it's just much sweeter than what I've been sampling tonight, and it pairs phenomenally with the cigar. It brings out these sweet notes from the cigar, and that little bit of spice that was in there before really does bring a nice balance to all the flavor, all the flavors combined. Easily for me, the best pairing of the night, and ironically, probably the cheapest bottle.
Almost certainly.
But they're all very good. This pairing for me is the best.
I would say that the Takatsuru 21 is the best, and not just because it's the oldest age statement, but it's got more complexity to it than the other two whiskeys. I'd say the my least favorite, although I still enjoy the whiskey, the Ichiro Mizunara Wood, not really great with the cigar. I would think the Mizunara actually might go really well with the Tortuga Connecticut, believe it or not, and I'm going to have to revisit that. I think my number two is the Miguel 15. Very, very good, but hard to pass up this Takatsuro 21 because it's just got so much going on. It's so balanced, and because this Tortuga Reserva is so balanced, they really work well together. This is a great pairing for me.
So before we leave, I know Victor wants to do some giveaways, and we'll get into most of them after the AFRN segment. But I definitely want to do an AFRN giveaway. And so AFRN listeners, email rob@cigarfederation.com and just put the Tortuga Japanese whiskey in the subject line. Let me know where you're stationed and how I can pick up how I can get some cigars to you, and I'll pick we'll pick a couple winners, and hopefully we can get some of these Tortuga cigars out there to you guys so you can enjoy it when you have hopefully when you have a little bit of downtime. But definitely want to do that this week. So again, rob@cigarfederation.com. Let me know where you're stationed and the best way to get stuff to you, and hopefully we can pick a few winners. I'll reach out to the winners directly. That brings us up to the end, yeah?
Well, pretty close. We'll do the pickings after the
The rest of them after the AFRN segment. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I think the one thing I'll close with, and I think Victor really nailed it when he said, you know, we're not saying that Japanese whiskey is better than Scotch whiskey. It's just something interesting on your shelf that provides a different lineup than what you have. And this, you know, the same is true. I've got American bourbon. I've got Irish whiskey. I've got American whiskey. I've got Scotch whiskey. I've got Japanese whiskey. None of them are better. It's just what I'm looking for at that particular moment. You know, the same is true when we're bringing it back to cigars. There's a lot of cigars in Nicaragua. I love many of them, and I don't have a favorite because, you know, there's a different flavor profile depending on what I'm looking for. And today, it's the Tortuga Reserva. I'm really, really enjoying this. Tomorrow might be the Cota Negra. The day after that, it's probably going to be the Connecticut, because I'm going to smoke that bad boy in the weekend, and I'm going to be my happy place. But better is subjective. Better is really what you're in the mood for. So there's lots out there.
Absolutely. So on that note, Victor, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. As always, I really appreciate being on, and thanks for all the listeners for being here and contributing. And yeah, it was really cool. I love drinking scotch with you guys. Hopefully we can do it in person sometime really soon.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So thanks again for our live listeners and for everyone listening on podcast and Armed Forces Radio Network. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Appreciate all your questions. Make sure to tune in next week. We're going to have a really cool show with the assistant brewer from Stone Brewing Company, which is going to be a really cool show for us. Make sure to tune in for Cigar Chat on Thursday. We're going to be talking humidification with Bovita. Should be a really interesting show. I know there's a lot of people out there that are super up on humidification, so you want to tune into that one. Make sure to stay safe, and as we always say, drink better, but drink less. And we're back.
So I have a confession.
Roger that.
Half the time when we do AFRN giveaways, I request it after the AFRN segment is over.
Wow. Well, we got it. We got it in this time.
Because normally I do it at the end, and it's like, well, wait a second, dumbass. They can't hear you.
Yeah, can't hear you.
Okay, so anyway, I had to get that off my chest. Because if I didn't tell you guys, I would have felt like I was lying to you, and we have a better relationship than that.
First of all, I'd like to say happy anniversary to Victor Vitale, who it's his wedding anniversary. The guys here doing our sharing our pairing episode, it's his wedding anniversary. So we need to let him go pretty quick here. So we should probably do these giveaways.
My wife's waiting patiently.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that it was today. You were talking about it. I figured it was upcoming. It's today?
It's today, yeah. Oh, I had no idea when I agreed to be on the show. I was like, yeah, I want to be on the show. And John, you had texted me, I think, yesterday, and I was like, oh, shit. What do I do? So I was maybe we have dinner reservations set for 8:30 or so.
Well, you can go now, and we'll take care of the rest and get all the information to you for the winners.
I could stay for a few more minutes, but definitely email any information that's important because I got an empty glass of scotch here that was full about 6 or 7 times.
Nice. Well, that's good. I'm glad. Well, happy anniversary.
And thank
you. I'm really glad that you're enjoying that Ichiro. the PDID. I know great. That we pointed you in that direction, and it's not the cheapest bottle of whiskey out there. So if you bought it and you didn't like it, I would have felt kind of bad. So.
No, honestly, I had no idea how much it cost, and I don't know if Ryan gave me a deal or what. John said it was a great price, and you know, it's not obviously not an everyday. Mm-hmm. Scotch or whiskey, or we've been drinking a lot of Grand Marnier, which I'm really not a Grand Marnier fan, but when I was there, he had this Grand Marnier dinner. He has like this banquet hall in the basement. You know, when you hear the word basement, you think like, oh, you know, just some crappy looking basement. I mean, this guy is like first class. I mean, you go downstairs and it's like you went back in time. You know, you're talking like probably spent $100,000 to refinish this place. High ceilings, beautiful floor, everything is like first class. And he had flown these people in from Grand Marnier. So anyway, I'm there buying the bottle of Chichi Boo, and he's like, hey, what are you doing this Wednesday? I'm like, oh, I don't know. Nothing, I guess. He's like, why don't you buy a ticket to this thing we got going on, this Grand Marnier thing? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So I buy the ticket, and I'm like, I really don't like Grand Marnier. So, of course, I'm there, and they're talking, you know, this guy's in from France, and he's talking about Grand Marnier, and we're drinking all this Grand Marnier, and I'm like, wow, I really like Grand Marnier. Who knew? So that's how easy it was, and I ended up with this 100-year-old bottle of Grand Marnier. I don't know how.
Awesome.
I'm like, my wife's going to drink this, you know, and it's autographed. And even while I was there, actually, I wanted to show you guys this. This is some bourbon that's made in Vermont. There was the guy that owned this company was there, so I had it autographed. And it's called Mad River Bourbon Whiskey, and it's made in Warren, Vermont. And this guy is supposedly, like, all organic and, like, really, like, you know, top-notch ingredients and everything. So I met him there, and I have his information. So if you ever wanted to talk with him, I can certainly, you know.
That'd be great.
Info.
How is it? Is it good? I saw you cutting into it during the show.
I cut it open, but I haven't tried it yet, so I may as well.
It's your anniversary. You might as well.
Right? Let's see. I don't know.
Just get somebody else to drive.
Yeah, wife's driving tonight.
No, that's a bad idea.
Oh man, it's not just me. That's good to know.
We're calling Uber.
Even better. Man, the Hibiki pairs so well with this. John, you have to you have some Hibiki, yeah?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's you have so to good. Try it with right. this. The pairing is really, really
this
good.
This is good. You know, it has that classic bourbon taste, but it's very smooth. I don't know, John, you got to try it. You know, Rob, you got to try this, really.
Absolutely.
You got to
twist my rubber arm.
You want me to send you some, you want me to pour it in a shampoo bottle and send it over?
The logistics of that get complicated.
I don't mind. Just tell me how to do it. I'll do it.
We'll talk offline.
All right.
Yeah, I think once we take sharing our pairings on the road, John and I will have to do a show from Maryland. Maryland, right?
Right now I'm in Philadelphia.
But that's where the guy's shop is, in Maryland, right?
No, he's in Massachusetts.
Maryland, Massachusetts. It's the same.
Yeah, you want to come, if you're going to do a show on the road and you want to come east, you want to do it there.
Absolutely.
This place is huge. It's like, I mean, I've been to, I guess this is a confession, I've been to a lot of spirit shops around the country, and there's no place like Julio's in Westboro.
I love the name, Julio's. It sounds awesome. We'll have to check it out. Absolutely.
If we do a show there, I'll definitely wear my Jets jersey just to get some B-roll for the show, because I'm sure we'll get some reactions for sure.
You're a Jets fan?
Yeah, we talked about this last show.
We did? I was drinking. Yeah.
I know, me too. Me too. And one of the NFL predictions, in fact, while I've got you, quickly, you did really well in your NFL picks, because I tracked that.
I did.
I did?
Yeah, you did.
Who?
Well, I only got some of your picks on because we had let you go, but So far, throughout 4 weeks, I'm just inching past Rob. I got Rob by one game in the first week. He wasn't on for the second week, so we're not going to count that. I got him by one pick on the second week. He picked the Eagles over the Jets, and they sure enough, they won. But I got him with the Cardinals over the 49ers. Now, to be fair, he picked the 49ers. He knew they weren't going to win, so I don't know if we really count that or not.
No, that was just me being stupid. Of course, count it.
Yeah, and then last week for week four, I didn't have a great week. I only went 10 for 15. Bob Dog, we actually, his picks got cut off. But of the picks we got, Bob Dog went 11 for 12. Aaron had a rough week. Aaron was our guest co-host last week. He went 9 for 15, so not a good week for Aaron. But Christian was giving us his picks in chat, and he had a great week, 11 for 15. He silly because he hates the Jets. He has a deep hatred for the Jets. I think he's a Dolphins fan. He picked the Dolphins over the Jets. I warned him to not take the Dolphins over the Jets, especially in London, but he went with the Dolphins. They got obliterated. He went with the Redskins. The Panthers kicked their butts. And we all lost on the Cardinals because I don't know what happened there. And then he took the Lions over the Seahawks, which, you know, whatever. But he had a pretty good week.
So, John, how do you want to do these? How do you want to do these giveaways?
You know, I have no idea. We're probably going to have to figure out a system here because we're still live. But I feel like we should tie it back to the Tortuga line. And I feel like what we're going to do is we're going to say we want you to tell us what the names of the Vitolas are in the Tortuga Reserva line. And you can email that to rob@cigarfederation.com.
No, John at Cigar Federation.
John at cigarfederation.com.
Don't email me. You email me, you lose.
All right, how about a backup? Let's make it a little easy for some folks who aren't too familiar. Maybe some pop culture. Add a pop culture question in there or something.
I was thinking that we could kind of stretch this out and we could do something on the site that's sitting there for a few days. People, maybe they haven't watched the show live. They can come in and watch the recorded version. And pop in an answer. So maybe we can do something like that too.
That's a good idea because that gives us some scramble room to come up with an actual good idea after the show.
Yeah. So
maybe
let's
give away like let's say I do 10 5 packs.
Wow.
Does that work?
That's a lot of 5 packs. All right. No, so that's awesome. A big giveaway. That's
my anniversary. Awesome. Come on, I'm happy. You know.
That's awesome.
I'm feeling generous. Why not?
Let's do that. We'll set something up on CigarFederation.com tomorrow. We'll pick a couple live winners tonight. I'm hoping to pick a couple of AFRN winners. So that's two, four. That's four. And then we'll pick 6 winners on CigarFederation.com. We'll give it a couple of days and let people do that. And we'll send all the information to you at once. You can send them all out at once. How's that sound? Perfect.
Cool. And if you want to drop off, Victor, feel free. We're just going to pound out some of these remaining audience questions, and then we're going to get into football talk, which, you know, football talk is usually about half an hour. So.
All right. Yeah, I have dinner. I got to leave for dinner.
Do it.
And it's 8:23. I got 5 minutes to comb my hair and put on some cologne.
Thanks again for having me on.
Love you guys. Awesome. Thanks for all the guests for showing up and piping in with some questions. Have a great night.
Thanks again. Victor. You too,
thanks,
man.
Thanks, Victor.
All right, you guys. Take care.
Have a great night. I mean, one of the classiest individuals. I mean, I think you said it during the IPCPR, not just one of your favorite cigar people, but maybe one of your favorite people, period. And Victor's just such a great, classy guy.
He's easy to like and easy to root for. And, you know, there's, when you get into any industry, and I'm not singling out the cigar industry, when someone has a product and you review that product, and you talk about that product in a critical way, not that we have any sort of, I don't know, whatever, in a critical way, everybody wants to be nice to you, right? Everybody wants to, you know, be nice to you, and when they see you, oh, hey, how's it going, blah, blah, blah. But most of the people, especially in this industry, I think are genuine. Victor's just a genuine guy, and he's really, really cool. Like, I almost feel I feel almost conflicted whenever I do any reviews of his stuff because I like him so much as a person. In fact, I don't know if I've ever reviewed any of this stuff. I know we have on the site, but I don't think I have for that particular reason.
I think I might be one of the only people to review cigars. Now, he generously sent us a hell of a bomb. Now we're after dark, so I can swear all I want. But
yeah, hell, you're really going out on a limb there.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty sauced. I'm getting rowdy here. But he sent us a heck of a pack here. Of course, at the front of that list, and we talked about this, is the Victor Vitale Tortuga Connecticut. Jared loved it. You loved it. I loved it. We couldn't stop talking about it during the show. So, I mean, it's at like the forefront of cigars I want to review and like really sit down, give it its due because, you know, if I liked it at the show and I mean, we're running all over the place. You're doing like 20 interviews an hour. We're running from place to place. We weren't really paying attention and we still loved it. So I feel like we sit down and do this review. It's going to be a spectacular cigar.
Yeah, no, and that is one that I'll chime in on because it's a fantastic cigar. Regardless, as far as I'm concerned, it's the best cigar he's ever made. Now I haven't smoked everything that he's made with the Oros and things like that. There's been some stuff that I haven't got my hands on, but that one is far and away my favorite. Might be my favorite. I don't know if I want to say it's my favorite Connecticut because there's a few out there that I really really like. And I really like this cigar too. It's up there. It's up there, yeah, for me for sure. And it was released in 2015. So I have a feeling it's going to get on some of our lists. Is that time is approaching. The list time is approaching. So
absolutely.
Anyway, there's one question in here from Jeff, Boldrick, and he's our fellow Canadian. Yeah,
that's correct. Yeah.
This is a good question. We've talked about this before. Since I noticed that you all seem to drink your whiskey neat, is there a reason for not drinking it on the rocks, or is it just personal preference? Now, yes, there is a reason, and some of it is personal preference. Much like smoking a cigar, I'm never going to tell somebody that they're smoking their cigar the wrong way. They can do whatever they want to do. It's their cigar. They spent their money on it. If they want to smoke it backwards, that's their prerogative. I don't know if it's going to work out too well, but that's their own business. There's a couple of reasons that I don't use ice or water or anything back while we're on the show. One, we don't really do a lot of cask strength stuff, and that's when I usually put a little splash of water in there. Two, where I don't have a freezer. Actually, I do have a freezer right next to me, so there's so much for that reason. I was just going to say convenience was a reason. The main reason that I don't put ice in any of my whiskeys or bourbons or any of my spirits that we do on the show is because I don't want John to yell at me. No, the journey through spirits is the same for me as the journey through cigars. You start in one place and you work your way towards other things and you find things that work better for you. There are still some spirits that I put ice in, whether that's the right thing to do or not. I mean, I don't care if it's the right thing to do. I'm enjoying what I want to enjoy. It's my money. I can do whatever I want. So are there professional ways to do it? Sure. I mean, we use these Glencairn glasses, which I got the name right. Wow. That John can tell you why this makes a difference, but it really does. It has to do with the way that it hits your palate and hits your nose and all that stuff. John can get more technical about it than I can. I stick with layman terms. But, you know, there's some things that I always put ice in, no matter what. Some things that I never put ice in. I tend to, for me, if it's the more, the smoother that it is, if I'm drinking something that's, you know, got a 20-year age statement on it, I'm not putting any ice in it because it's going to be smooth and I don't need it. There's many more technical reasons, and I'm going to let John answer that part of the question.
Yeah, I mean, and I could do, God, I could do an hour-long segment on temperature, but I'm not going to. Whiskey is the same as, you know, if you get a really nice stout or a triple or a double or Doppelbock, they have recommendations on the temperature, and there is a reason for that. It's the same reason why if you get a Miller Lite or a Budweiser, they want it as cold as possible. You know,
so you
can't taste it. And it's true. When you have a really cold beverage, you are numbing the flavors, the flavor receptors, the flavonoids on your tongue so you can't taste it. Because if you could taste it, if you have a Budweiser at 55 degrees, you're going to be not a happy camper. Now, you have a cold stout, you're going to lose a ton of the nuances in that stout. So they recommend, you know, a stout's got to be served between 53 and 58 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's because that is the best temperature for that beverage. The same is absolutely true of whiskey and scotch. And again, you know, if you want to add ice to it, it's your beverage. You do whatever the hell you want. I'm not going to tell you how to drink your beverage. Just like Rob, you know, being the conscious Canadian that I am, I'm not going to come up and slap that beverage out of your hand. I'm not going to give you a lecture. You want to drink it that way? You enjoy it? Hey, man, it's your beverage. Do your thing. You want my recommendation? My recommendation is try it first without water and without ice, because it's a beverage that is best served slightly below room temperature. That's when you're going to get the most out of that whiskey. You're going to get the most flavor profile out of it. If you then want to add ice, hey, man, fill your boots. I have bourbon with a big old honking ice cube in it because I like it slightly chilled, and I like the slight bit of a distilled runoff, water runoff into my bourbon. So, you know, I'm not even following my own rules. I have my bourbon with a big old ice cube. That's how I like it. I drink my scotch neat because, you know, scotch is expensive. I'm paying a lot of money for a bottle of scotch or whiskey. It's best served at slightly before room temperature. I mean, it's as simple as that. So, yeah.
I thought I was muted. it's funny. I actually posted a beer review today. I do some writing for another site, mixedandmash.com. So feel free to check that out. My wife and I have our little blog. And I posted a review of the pumpkin ale from Dogfish Head. And I went through the whole four-pack. They come in four-packs. I went through the whole four-pack before I actually wrote the review. Because if you look at my notes, that I take little notes while I'm sipping it, you know, on the nose and the flavors I'm getting and everything. Same thing I do with cigar, but with beer it's a little bit different. Right off the bat, I popped it out of the fridge. I popped the bottle, I poured it, took a couple of sips, and I wasn't impressed. But it's a brown ale, and a brown ale, which I've learned now, I didn't realize this, brown ale you want to serve right around the same temperature as a stout, kind of in that 50 to 60 degrees is really what I put it at. I didn't take its temperature before I had it. But the fridge that I'm storing my beer in is at 10 degrees Celsius, which is about 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And as that beer warmed up, I got so much more flavor out of it. And I've never had such a drastic difference in a beverage of any kind as I had with that particular beer. You know, taking it right out of the fridge and drinking it right out of the bottle, whatever, it was bland. There's a little bit of pumpkin in there, but not much. But once you let it warm up, not to room temperature, but, you know, like 58 degrees, this bouquet of flavor just opened up, and it was amazing. There's so much flavor to it, so much spice, so much of those pumpkin notes and some brown sugar in there, things that I wasn't getting before at all. A huge, huge difference. So, yeah, I mean, like John said, I'm using that as an example, and it's beer, but as John said, try it different ways and see what works best for you. For a lot of people, drinking a spirit of any kind neat isn't the easiest thing to do.
No.
But, you know, I mean, to each his own. I see people drink vodka straight. I could never do that.
Yeah.
Gin, I could drink gin straight a little bit, but not vodka. Oof.
So I'm gonna continue to power through these questions because I'm really eager to talk about NFL. Not that I don't appreciate the questions, but I'm super, super pumped about talking NFL today. You know, one of the things that's great is we're drinking whiskey tonight, so I don't have, you know, 64 ounces of beer in me, and I'm not doing the pee-pee dance here on our podcast.
Oh, like me neither. That's a good point.
It's nice. Bob Dog wants to know, is there many Japanese whiskeys that are peated? Absolutely. Rob had an example with the Miyagikyo 12. It's slightly peated. Of course, the Chichibu, the big baller bottle that Victor had, is peated. I wouldn't say there's as many expressions in Japanese whiskey that are peated as the Scotch industry, but that's more a factor of the amount of distillers that they have. So I would say in terms of a percentage, it's very similar to the Scotch industry, if not higher. So yeah, absolutely. You can get some peated Japanese whiskeys, and I welcome you to try them out. If you're not a fan of peated whiskey, that actually is a great sort of training wheel way to approach Japanese whiskey, because you are going to get very, very balanced peat. And it's a great way to introduce yourself to what peated whiskey can offer.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of did, and I've told my peated story before. I did peated the opposite way. I didn't really know what peated scotch was until my wife brought home a bottle of Lafroy, and I kind of had to muscle my way through it just because my wife bought it for me. It's the training wheels aspect, and I like that term. I kind of use that sometimes. We've used it a bunch of times on the show, actually, in reference to cigars as well. The training wheels aspect really is there. I mean, with this... which one was it? It was the Magikyo that was lightly peated. I wouldn't have even tasted it, to be honest. Granted, it was my second pairing smoking a cigar, so maybe if I had it on a fresh palate, I would. But you know, something like that Ichiro's, which is not, it's not all that accessible to someone, but it's far less peated than anything that I've tasted that is considered a peated scotch. Or a peated whiskey, I should say. But a beautiful flavor profile, and it really is. I mean, if that's something that you're interested in, you know, you want to try some of those things that have some of that heavier peat note, that's a good way to start. Or just do what I did. Just buy a bottle of Lafroig and jump right in and
hell yeah,
muscle through, man.
Boom. All right, moving on. And another great question from Jeff Baldrick, who is a member of the Canadian Cigar Enthusiast. Thanks, Jeff, for your comment. Appreciate it. he wants to know where I purchased my vast array, and it is vast, Rob can tell you, of whiskeys that you seem to have. Here in Ontario, the LCBO seems to have a very limited selection, and that's their only option. It's true. Does Alberta have a much better alcohol distribution system? Yes. Because like all or almost all the provinces in Alberta and many of the states actually in the United States, we used to have a, you know, quote unquote state distribution system. And the problem with the state distribution system is they are much like communist governments, very, very strict about what they bring in. They're not bringing in rare or unusual products. The cost tends to be quite high because there's not a lot of competition. Now, because we like our booze here in Alberta and we like our beer, we kick them out, and we've had a privatized system for quite some time. What that means is that it's a much easier system for Scotch companies, Scotch distilleries, and Japanese whiskey distilleries to bring the product into Alberta, not be heavily taxed and have a wide market. So believe it or not, Alberta only having something like 18% of the country's population, I think, maybe not even 18%. We have something like 85% of the selection of whiskey and scotch coming into our province. So we have a substantial amount of product available to us at a very reasonable price. In fact, I was just in Washington just a couple of weeks ago. Great, great trip to Washington, Seattle. I mean, beer mecca for me, but their whiskey prices are absurd, like just crazy. Like there were times where I'm going, not even taking exchange into account, I can buy this in Canadian dollars cheaper than what it's available here in Washington.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That must be a state thing.
Mm-hmm. They have a state distribution system. I think they're going away from it. One of the guys I was talking to there was talking about how they're moving away from that, and that'll improve the prices for sure. But when you have a state or a province distribution system, it's going to raise the prices of your product, and it's going to make the selection very limited. So yeah. The unfortunate part is for Ontario, they don't get a lot of Japanese whiskey, and I feel bad for you guys. It sucks. You got to kick the LCBO out. You got to bring in a privatized system. That's how you're going to get a better selection and better prices for sure.
John getting political.
Boom. Boom. We've got a federal election coming up next week, actually.
Really? Mm-hmm. You guys don't have a president. Do you have like a prime minister? Or what's
your prime minister? Yeah.
Wow, that was a good guess.
Good guess.
When we start talking about shit like this, you realize how much of an idiot I am.
No, you nailed it, man. You nailed it. Actually,
I knew you didn't have a king.
That's true. We don't have a king.
There's only so many options.
Yeah. So we're way off topic, but it's after dark, so we can do whatever the fuck we want. But We had a hilarious, my girlfriend and I had a hilarious time in Washington because 50% of the time people would be like, where are you guys from? And that, you know, we're used to just saying Canada because to be honest, most Americans are not up on Canadian geography. We don't want to, you know, I don't want to say Calgary, Alberta, because even when I say Alberta, they don't know what the hell I'm talking about. So we'd say Canada. 50% of the time we had this hilarious Seattle response where they're like, you know, Canada is a really big place, right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm aware Canada is a really big place. I'm like, well, I mean, where in Canada are you from? And I'd say Calgary, Alberta. And they go, oh yeah, Calgary for sure. I know Calgary. It's, you know, now 40 minutes away by plane, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, shit. Okay. You guys are up. Now, of course, the hilarity of that is, so we started saying Calgary, Alberta. And then the other 50% of the time we'd say Calgary, Alberta. And guy'd be is that near Toronto? No, man, it's not near Toronto. So anyways, that's my funny, to me, funny Seattle story.
Yeah, you're stretching the term funny now.
I know. All right, let's talk football, because I've missed having you on. You missed a couple weeks. You've been working like a dog, and I miss our NFL banter.
You miss my Musk?
I can't quit you. Maybe we should talk about – do you want to talk about fantasy football? Because
I had a shitty week.
And
I'll be honest, I don't know if Matt watches the show or not, but when I looked and saw that I wasn't playing you this season, the one person I wanted to beat was Matt. And it really pisses me off that I've outscored Matt every week except the week that we played. And I'll probably continue to outscore him for the rest of the season every week. But except for the week that we played. And my team completely shit the bed, and I still had a shot with my last two guys. It was a very outside shot. But I had a shot.
And I think you still outscored like 12 other teams in our 16-team league.
There was only like two other teams that would have beat me. And I had a shitty week. And I know this sounds like I'm bragging, but it's – I don't know. I got really lucky. And although – but I lost Dunbar for the full season, which sucks. Because when I saw that he wasn't drafted, I actually picked him up before the season started. And I was pretty proud of him because he's played well. I mean, he's got like – he had like two carries – on the whole season, but in a PPR league, he was the number 12 running back or something. He's catching so many passes for the Cowboys, but now he's done. So I've got an interesting week this week. I can't remember who I'm playing, but I've got some injury concerns at running back. I've been trying to pick up another running back and it's not really working. I offered a trade, and I won't say who I offered it to because I like this guy, but his response was funny. Like, I offered him an equivalent wide receiver for his running back, because he has a plethora of backs and I have a plethora of receivers, and you can only play so many at a position. And our guys kind of evened out. And he's like, well, I basically break even on this deal, so I can't do it. I'm like, well, aren't trades supposed to be fair like that? So you're basically, you can only play so many running backs, but this guy would slot in as your starting wide receiver, but you're not going to do it, even though, I mean, I get his point, I guess, but I don't know. I was just bummed because it would have been a good deal for both of us. And I was actually trying to trade for a guy who was on bye this week anyway. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Fantasy's been fun. I mean, it's a 16-team league, so it's like, it's a shit show.
Yeah.
I mean, there is nobody available unless you're looking at kickers. That's it.
Yeah. So the funny thing is my kicker's on bye. Somehow I missed the fact my kicker's on bye. I didn't even get my kicker in the waiver wire. I picked up Cutler again, and I figured because there'd be a lot of competition for quarterbacks, and my kicker got picked up, and I'm like, what the heck? And that's just a byproduct of a 16-team league, is that all the talent is just getting picked over and picked over and picked over. It's so difficult.
Bye weeks, it gets crazy. I need a tight end this week. I picked up the guy in Gilmore for the Ravens, who had a couple of good weeks, but he's hurt. And I still don't know if he's going to play. So he was really the only one that had any upside, at least what I thought, who was available. So I'm just going to ride it out. If he doesn't play, I'll just pick up, hopefully, a warm body who takes the field and has a chance to get me 3 or 4 points.
But now I'm going to finish this fantasy segment by talking about hopefully this doesn't come across as me bragging, because I was going into this weekend against a pretty tough opponent. In fact, one of the toughest opponents I think I'm going to face all year, except for Matt, who's going to kick my ass. He was one of the highest scoring people in my conferences, and I didn't realize that two of my big premier players were on bye because I just wasn't paying attention. And I'm like, oh my God, like I'm going to get just pounded. And what happened is Devontae Freeman went on this fucking tear.
Out of nowhere.
Guy had 14 carries, 68 yards, 3 touchdowns, and he scores like, I think it was like 37 points. And I'm like, listen, I won the week, but you know, on paper, there's no way that I should, like, I actually feel bad about this, that, you know, to be fair, that's not a week I should have won. I should have gotten my ass kicked. I won. It's hard to feel good about the win because, like I said, on paper, he should have beat me soundly. He had a bad week. His players didn't perform. Devontae, 37 points. You can't lose if a freaking running back's putting up 37 points. That's just insane.
Yeah, he screwed me because I have Julio Jones, who's been a monster every week. But they were up 30-0 or something, so I don't even know if he's on the field. He got me 6 points.
Yeah.
Normally, he had 6 points by the end of the first quarter.
Yeah.
I'm getting weird production out of Greg Olsen at tight end. It's like he'll get me 4 points and then 25 and then 3 points and then 30. Like, let's be a little bit more consistent, and that'll make me happier. But anyway, no, I feel good about my team. I'm comfortable with it. I think this week's going to be tough for me because I think I'm playing somebody who scores a lot of points. And I've got two of my main guys, Andy Dalton and A.J. Green, are playing Seattle. So that's a tough matchup.
Yeah.
So for a quarterback and a wide receiver. But, I mean, really, Seattle gets to do whatever they want. So, you know, pass interference on every play, bat balls out of the end zone. That's not a penalty. It's fine.
So moving into the pick week, and this week I'm going to do it a little differently because I'm lazy. If you want to participate in our fun pick, email me your picks at john@cigarfederation.com. Email me before your Thursday night game, and we'll talk about it at the next show on Wednesday. I don't know if this is good. I'm 41-63 for the year, which seems all right. I'm kind of pushing third place in my pick'em league, which is not awesome, but hopefully we'll turn it around this week. First up on our Thursday night game, we've got the Houston Colts. How much whiskey have I had tonight?
We got this Colts.
Because they're lucky because they got that quarterback. The Indianapolis Colts go to Houston to face off against the Texans, who have just looked like garbage all season. I feel bad for them. You talk about the Hard Knocks curse, and really it's hit them hard. They've just had a terrible, terrible season. Everyone crapped all over Indianapolis, I think, early on in the year. And, you know, now Indianapolis is kind of starting to get their jive together. So Colts travel to Houston, face off against the Texans. Where are you at with that game?
Is Luck going to play?
I hope so.
He didn't play last week, right?
I don't know. I thought he did.
I don't think he did.
Wow. Maybe I got to pay more attention.
Let me look it up here real quick. I'm not going to tell you where I go to for all my information, but Andrew Luck, he's questionable.
Oh, that means he'll play for sure.
When asked, Coach Chuck Pagano said the Colts are going to do the right thing, which tells me that somehow – and I didn't even know this guy was still in the league. Matt Hasselbeck. And absolutely, he started for them this past week.
And they won their game. I mean, they won their game by 2 points, I think, but they won their game.
No, he didn't. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did. And what did he do? And he's actually listed as questionable. Wow. It says Luck is supposedly on track to play, blah, blah, blah. Hasselbeck practiced fully. So, I picked the Colts to win the Super Bowl.
You did. They won last week.
I'll stick with them because, yeah, I mean, the Texans have been kind of shitty.
I'm going to go with the Colts. I'm sorry, I'm typing while we're talking here, but I'm taking the picks down because I'm lazy and I don't want to check it later. But Yeah, I mean, no offense to Texans fans, but your team is just shit all week. J.J. Watt's got to go to a different team. That's what's going to happen. He's got to get a big payout, go to another team. Colts are going to take that one. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I think the Colts are going to take that one.
I'm on board with that.
All right. The Chiefs, who I was kind of high on the Chiefs, and, man, they've been really disappointing me lately. Cutler's back for the Bears. Bears are traveling to Kansas City to face off against the Chiefs. I'm going to give this one to the Bears. Cutler's back. They need some wins. They haven't had a good season. I'm going to go with the Bears in this one. I know you're supposed, you know, in a tight game, you're supposed to pick the home team. But I'm going Bears.
And Kansas City. The Bears coming off a game that they probably shouldn't have won. They beat the Raiders. Yeah, I'm going to go Kansas City in this. Arrowhead seems like a shitty place to go and play. I think Cutler's a shitty quarterback. I'm going to go Kansas City. I'm going to differ with you on this one.
That's good. I like when we split because it gives me a chance to win. Seahawks, who my big tirade last week was they had to win that game because if they didn't, things were going to change.
They won.
Unfortunately, the Seahawks are going to face off against the Bengals. The Bengals, man, and I kind of have this rivalry going with the Bengals, the Jets and the Bengals. They look legit this year. The Seahawks are terrible. Marshawn doesn't seem to be able to – excuse me, doesn't seem to be able to get any production. At home, I don't see how the Seahawks are going to beat the Bengals. Like, I don't even think this game is going to be close. I think the Bengals are just going to just blow out the Seahawks.
I would love that. From a fantasy standpoint and from a real-life standpoint, I would love that. I don't know if I see it happening. It's tough because, like, Cincinnati, they're all about offense, and I think their defense is fine, but it's not great.
Not great.
But they've got weapons, though, and, you know, the Seahawks defense is good. That's tough, man. I'm thinking about my fantasy team. I've got the Bengals quarterback, the Bengals wide receiver, and the Seahawks defense. What am I going to do? I'm going to lose.
That's a tough fantasy lineup.
I would love to pick the Bengals, but I don't know if I can. Because I mean, clearly the NFL wants the Seahawks to win, so I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
Wow, bold choice from Rob on that pick. I don't know where to go with that. So, moving right along, the Redskins, who should not have won against the Eagles last week, but somehow they did, face off against the Falcons, who have just been obliterating teams left, right, and center. We just finished talking about how they ran the points up on the Houston Texans. This is another game. This is my the John, the surgeon, stone cold lock of the week of the century. Falcons are just going to demolish the Redskins. This game isn't going to be close. Falcons for sure.
Are they in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, I don't think that makes a difference, but I think it's going to be even less close. Yeah, I would. I like the Falcons. Absolutely.
All right. The Mediocrity Bowl again this week. The Jags face off against the Bucks. I don't know what to make of either of these teams. The Bucks win games that I feel they should lose. The Jags win games they should lose. This is one of those split games where I'm just going to pick the home team. I don't care about this game, so I'm just going to go Bucks.
Who's playing again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Jacksonville Jaguars travel to Tampa to face off against the Bucks.
Ugh. You pick the Bucks. I'll go Jacksonville.
All right.
Have they won yet? Have either of these teams won yet?
Jags have won one, and I think Tampa's. Now, Tampa might actually not have a. Bucks have won, and I think the Jags have won. I don't know.
It's not the Mediocrity Bowl, it's a dog shit bowl.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, I'll go out on a limb. What the hell?
All right. Saints and Eagles, Saints winning against the Cowboys. I mean, I don't know if anyone watched the Saints Cowboys game last week. Saints kicker missed a field goal from, I think it was like 38 yards. Now, I'm not saying I can make a 38 yard field goal, but if you're in the NFL and you don't make a 38 yard field goal, you have no business as a kicker. That's a gimme kick. That's almost a pat attempt. Like under 40 yards. That's a gimme. Now, what Drew Brees did is he said, well, we're just going to win this game. So they went into overtime, and Drew Brees on two drives won the game, which pissed me off. So I'm feeling like I'm going to pick the Saints because I'm going to pick the Saints, and then they're going to have a shit game, and the Eagles are going to kill them, and I'm going to be pissed off next week. But I feel like I have to go with the Saints because the Eagles have just found new and interesting ways to win to lose every game.
Yeah, I think I go with the Saints in that one. I think the Saints are starting to get their proverbial shit together.
All right. Okay. In another game that is not going to be interesting to anyone, even maybe fans of these teams, the Browns go to face off against the Baltimore Ravens. Fuck, I don't know. I don't know. The Ravens have – their defense is – I mean – props to the defense. The defense has been playing really well. Browns are just a mess all over the board at offense. This is going to be a defensive game. It's going to be like I bet the combined points for this game is going to be under 20. Like it's going to be 12-9. So I'm going to have to go with the Ravens.
I'm going to take the Browns. And I was going to take them even before you went through your spiel. I think this is the week where they finally pull it's McCown, right? They finally pull him, and they give Johnny Manziel the ball, and he sparks some excitement in the way. And then he's going to be the starting quarterback for the rest of the year. So, fantasy football, pick up Johnny Manziel.
There you go. St. Louis Rams face off against the Packers. Somehow, and I don't know how this happened, but on the podcast, I picked the Packers over the 49ers last week. And then in my pick'em pool, I picked the 49ers. I don't know how that happened. Like, obviously, I had way too much to drink, too much on the IPAs. I feel like I should have gotten that win because I said Packers in the show, but whatever. Packers, Aaron Rodgers, Rams. Come on now. Rodgers at home. Discount double check.
who did the this sounds like a trap game to me.
Absolutely sounds like a trap game.
Who do the Packers
game.
Play next week?
Week 6?
Yeah, they have a bye or something. Man. Sorry, I'm asking too many questions.
No, it's all good. Let me look. I'll look it up. I mean, it's our podcast. We can do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who they play next week.
I can tell you, just to fill the space here as I frantically look up the schedules.
I'm looking up too.
The Panthers, Dolphins, Vikings, and Jets are all on bye. It's really weird to me that two AFC teams would have the same bye week. I'm not sure how NFL scheduling works on that. But
so the Packers play San Diego next week.
That's a tough game. San Diego defensively is a tough, tough game.
You know what? I'm going to take the Rams. Screw it.
Wow. Going with the upset pick.
In Lambeau. That's my upset of the week. That just feels like a trap game to me.
It does feel like a trap game. Okay. My boy Tyrod did not have a good game. I don't know what I was thinking starting him last week against the Giants. It kind of felt like a trap game, and I should have gone with my instincts. Giants at home, I should have known better. I went with the Bills last week. But they're facing off against the Tennessee Titans. I don't care that it's in Tennessee. Bills are taking this one. They got beat up last week. I feel like they're going to win this one. It's going to be a Bills game the entire game.
All right, so we're looking at the Bills and the Titans. That's an interesting game. Those, and again, I'm not looking at stats or anything, but they feel like young teams that are potentially moving in the right direction. Although the Titans are 1-2, coming off a bye. Apparently, Green Beckham was arrested during a traffic stop. That's not what you want to see. I'm going to go Bills. I'll take the Bills too.
Yeah, you can't not take the Bills in that game.
Well, you could easily not take the Bills. You could just say, I take the Titans. But, yeah, I'll go with the Bills.
You could have, but, you know, you want to win that game. So, Arizona Cardinals, who, you know, we talk about trap games. Last week, the Rams beat the Cardinals. And the Cardinals, I keep talking them up. I keep saying that I feel like the Cardinals are just a lock for the Super Bowl appearance. And then they go and lose a game against the Rams, which, you know, I don't know what that's all about. But they face off against the Lions, who are just a complete mess. You've been following them in Pro Football Talk. They've got locker room dissension. It's just a mess. So I feel like the Cardinals are going to come back on the road and they beat the Lions. I don't think it's going to be a spectacular win, but I think the Cardinals are going to take this one.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals take this one too, because the way the Lions lost last week, and they're all talking about, well, we're just going to move on for the next game. That's tough to get rid of. the way they lost in that game against Seattle. So they're going to carry a little bit of that over. I would go with the Cardinals as well.
The Patriots, who are off of a bye week and always dangerous off of a bye week, I think their record off of a bye week is like 92%. If you look at like the last 15 or 20 years, they just don't lose off of bye weeks. Now, it is odd to have an early bye week for the Patriots. They're normally quite favored by the league. They usually have a late season bye week. But Cowboys lacking a lot of offensive weapons. Romo's out. Man, this has got a Patriots beating all over it.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever the spread is, I don't know what the spread is, and we're not talking about gambling. We're just talking about for fun. But I take the Pats without even blinking an eye.
Okay.
I play 10 points.
Yeah, it's easily a 10. If there's a 9.5 point spread on this, take it, because they're it's going to be a 10.5, 12-point game. Now, you talk about trap games. Here is my trap game of the week. The Broncos against the Raiders in Oakland. And for anyone who knows the history, for anyone out there who knows the history of these teams, they play smash mouth football. And
they're going to stab each other.
They're going to stab each other. The Broncos have won games that they maybe shouldn't have won. The Raiders have definitely lost games that they shouldn't have lost. Last week was a perfect example where the Bears won and they should not have won against the Raiders. This is the ultimate trap game. I'm going to go with the Broncos, and I feel like that might be a mistake. I feel like this is going to be an upset week where the Raiders come out really, really aggressive on the defense, stifle the Broncos, and just grind it out. But I got to go with my gut. My gut says Broncos.
If this is a grind it out kind of game, then I don't think the Broncos win. I think the Broncos need to make a couple of quick splashes early if they're going to want to win this game. I'm contrarian this week. I'm going to take the Raiders.
Bam.
Wow, I never thought – that's a sentence I never thought I'd say.
All right.
We're differing on many picks.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be interesting because we're differing.
It's probably because I'm still drinking.
Absolutely. Going on to the Migikyo, I finished off my Takatsuru. Interesting matchup, maybe not for watching it, but interesting matchup on paper. 49ers travel to New York to face off against the Giants. I don't know what to make of this game because the Giants won last week. I don't think that was really a commanding win. They won against the Bills. The Bills didn't really play great football. Giants have kind of looked like garbage all season, but so have the 49ers. So I don't know what to make of this game. I really don't.
I haven't watched a lot of 49er football. I've been at the ballpark a lot, so I've missed a lot of their games, thankfully. Here's what I see in the 49ers. They have to win a game. They'll talk about playoffs and all this. They don't have playoff aspirations. If you're paying attention, you know that that's not really an option for them. They need to win a game. Colin Kaepernick needs to win a game to keep his job. I think the 49ers are going to win this game. I don't think it's going to be pretty. I think they're going to maybe get like a punt return touchdown or something. Somebody's going to have to do something big, and it's not going to be on the offense to make something happen. And this, to me, feels like one of those games where Eli is going to choke on himself. And I think the Niners could win this game like 24-17, something like that. And, yeah, I don't know. For some reason, and maybe it's just me being a homer, because I probably pick the Niners every time, and they suck. They're awful. But they've got to win a game. They've got to win a game. They're not going to go 1-15 or whatever. And I feel like this is a team they can beat.
All right. Well, with respect to your having to pick the 49ers a couple weeks ago, I'm going to take the Giants just to do the split here. I have no love for the Giants, but I'm just going to split this. I'm going to go Giants. You're going to go 49ers.
I'm actually going to watch it. I'll have my Rice jersey on. It hasn't been very successful this year, but whatever. We'll see.
And then the last matchup of the week, I don't know if this is going to be an exciting football game either. The Steelers minus Roethlisberger, who allegedly did some things, go to San Diego to face off against the Chargers. Without Roethlisberger in San Diego, I'm going to have to give the edge to the Chargers in this one.
You know, I just pulled up the Chargers page here, and how in the shit did they lose to the Vikings?
The Vikings play tough ball against the Chargers. They always play tough ball against the Chargers. They grind it out. It's a grinder. Vikings love to grind it out.
AP had 20 carries for $126.
Absolutely.
That's how they won. I don't know. To me, the Steelers are a good team. It's funny, I was watching a little bit of the Steelers last week, and I'm thinking, like, they have Michael Vick on the field who, you know, he's 80 years old, and he didn't allegedly do some things. He did some awful things.
Terrible.
And he still managed to look better than Colin Kaepernick. I don't know, like, how does that even happen? But, you know, they're getting Martavis Bryant back. It looks like the Chargers are favored by 3 just because of the home game. This is a tough game to call.
Absolutely.
You said it's not going to be an exciting game. I think it'll be a good game. Let me rephrase. I think it'll be a close game. I don't know if it'll be a good game. I'm gonna take the Chargers because I've got Danny Woodhead, and I'm hoping that my boy can do some stuff.
I'm going to also take the Chargers. I'm going to say that this is going to be a defensive game in terms of how it swings. Vic's going to throw a pick six and an interception. So he's going to have 2 ints with 1 pick 6. And to me, that's going to be what swings the game. That's my big prediction for the week.
So you're talking about pick six?
Pick six.
So you're telling me I should pick up the Chargers defense?
Yes, yeah, this would be a good week to pick up the Chargers defense.
Are they available in our league?
Dude, is anyone available in our league? Come on.
Let's just for S&Gs.
You should look it up. I bet like the defenses that are available are like the Tennessee Titans.
No, they're actually taken.
That's crazy.
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 defenses available in our league.
And, what are those defenses, just out of curiosity?
They are the Pittsburgh Steelers.
That's surprising.
The wrong half of the Charger game. The Raiders defense was recently dropped.
I would start the Raiders this week.
The Browns defense.
Terrible.
The Saints defense. The Bears. Terrible. The Bears. And the 49ers.
Also
and
terrible.
Really, like, this would be the week to play the 49ers if you were ever going to play them. Because I really do think that they're going to get a touchdown from somebody that they shouldn't normally get a touchdown from. At least one. And I don't know. I just feel like this is going to be a hunger game for them, if you will. And if they can't come out with some fire for this game in New York after just shitting the bed all this season, then there's just no hope. And there is no hope, but there can at least be hope to be competitive. And if everybody wants to keep their job, they need to win this week. This is a must win for the 49ers. So whatever that means.
There you have it. So that's our terrible NFL picks for the week. Again, if you want to participate in our fun league, there's no prizes. Maybe there is prizes. Who knows? Email me at johncigarfederation.com with your picks. I'll try and get them in for next week. Again, we're going to have assistant brewer from Stone Brewing, which I'm pretty excited for. I love Stone Brewing. Rob loves Stone Brewing. I don't even know what I'm going to drink, but should be a great show. We're going to get pretty sauced. Should be a lot of fun. Make sure to tune in tomorrow night with Bovita on Cigar Chat. Great show. Also, a shout-out to Pipe Dummies. Logan is running Pipe Dummies weekly. Check it out on Tuesday nights. It is every week. Even if there's not something in the front page, check out the show page. I guarantee you there's a Pipe Dummies running at 6 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Tuesday night.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. I see there's still listeners tuning in to our whiskey ramblings here. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate all of our live listeners, all of our podcast listeners out there. You guys want to shoot us an email, tell us you want something on the show for pairing. We're crazy. We'll do whatever. Just shoot us an email. We appreciate it. And as we always say, drink better, but definitely drink less.